The Visionary Health Podcast.
Welcome to the Visionary Health Podcast, where we delve into the world of functional medicine and help you unlock the secrets to a healthier, happier life. I'm your host, Paul, and today we have a special guest joining us, Dr. Manop, an integrative and functional medical doctor with a passion for optimizing gut health for his patients. Together, we'll be exploring the crucial role of gut health plays in overall wellness and the various ways in which Dr. Manop is helping his patients achieve optimal health. With his expertise in functional medicine and integrative approaches, he'll be sharing his insights and knowledge on this vital aspect of health. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn as we bring you the latest information and expert perspectives from some of the world's leading scientists, clinical health experts, and thought leaders. The Visionary Health Podcast is about to begin, so let's embark on this journey to a healthier, happier life together. All right. So hey, hi, Manop. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. As you know, we're talking about gut health today, so let's just get right into it. I just want to ask you, like, why is gut health important? What's the big deal? We hear about it a lot and in the media and everything, and I'm just wondering why it's so important.
As we know that gut has been linked to several systems in our body, brain, immune system, so that's why nowadays, people are more focusing on the gut because it relates and connects to a lot of organs in the body. So that's why. And now research suggests that a gut actually influences not just a small part, but the majority or the main part that influence a lot of function in our body.
You say it influences the whole body, but like, I know I've heard it that it, like, you know, there's this thing called the gut brain connection.
Yes.
Or the gut brain axis. And I've read that the gut can affect everything and it's like a second brain. But it doesn't, like, do we know if it thinks or is it like a subconscious brain, like a more of like a reptilian type?
I think so, because gut, influence your brain, so it might influence your behavior too. So that's a subconsciously influence your lifestyle and your emotion. Yeah.
So it influences us, but we don't understand how it influences us.
Is that right? Yes. The connection. A lot of time we think about what is the real axis between brain and gut. Your brain and gut, they link it with the nerve. We call vagus nerve, is one of cranial nerve. Another one that link it to it's neurotransmitters. A lot of time when you eat, most of the time you eat, and then your gut produce some of the, we call short chain fatty acid, butyric acetate or other short chain fatty acid, and it feed to your brain. And a lot of neurotransmitter, serotonin, that's my example. Serotonin, 90% of serotonin produced by your gut. So later on, they will send to your brain. So if you don't have enough of serotonin, and then your brain will receive enough of serotonin. So it will affect your overall emotion and other behavior. So that's how they connect it. And sometimes this is how your gut influences your brain. And when your brain is and your brain connects to your gut by the nerve, you can feel that when you have when you are excited or you are depressed or you are having some mood, and it affects your gut because there's a vagus nerve. So this controlled by the parasympathetic. So you can know that when you are playing basketball, you never feel hungry, but when you stop, you feel hungry. So a lot of times your brain and your gut is most of the time they are connected. They are talking to each other, and your gut talking to your brain by sending some nutrients or hormone, short chain fatty acid or the neurotransmitter to your brain so they can influence each other.
So what happens, like, people who don't have enough serotonin or what causes that?
People who have low serotonin, not everyone, but most of them in the research, it would suggest when you have low serotonin, it's associated with depression, depressed mood, lack of drive. That's all the things that will as a sign or symptom from low serotonin. So that's why a lot of time doctor prescribe medication just to make the serotonin more available in your brain. So that's why you can feel happier.
Right, but what causes that low serotonin? Like you're saying that most of the serotonin that we have in our bodies is coming out of the gut. Do we know why some people produce less serotonin in their gut and then have problems?
Yes, that's as I mentioned, the serotonin 90% produced by gut, which is by gut microbiome in the gut. So when you have a problem with the gut or a microbiome, you will be having problem with the serotonin level. And another thing is the food you eat. Some food because the serotonin make from mostly tryptophan. So it depends. So doctor has to dip into that. What's the cause? Because patients don't eat the food that contain the tryptophan, or because they eat enough, but because they have gut problems, so the gut cannot produce a serotonin. But most of the time, it's the gut problem because tryptophan can be found in a lot of foods. So most of the times, gut problem, and then contribute to not low serotonin and giving patient have a depressed mood and depression.
So I know, and I understand that like everybody's different, right? And so there's no one fast rule for everybody, but are you saying in a lot of cases, people who are depressed, it can be brought back to their gut health?
Yes. When we see mental problem with psychological problem or mental abnormality, this patient, we all dip into gut problem. Gut is just one factor. So there's other factors too. Maybe they're having some really some event that affected them, or maybe they have several factors together, plus the event that happened, plus their gut, plus their gene a little bit, and plus their other diet, lifestyle, and they're all contributing a little bit together. So that's why the depression or other things develop.
But would your if someone does have, say, depression or a low mood, would your recommendation be for them to have their gut health checked?
Yes, I would say, because this is one of the contributing factors. So in the functional way, we're not trying to just pinpoint one factor. We look at overall every aspect of your lifestyle and make adjust to be more optimal level or be more suitable or in the optimal state. So that's why your body can heal itself.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say definitely gut is one of the contributing factors. So we have to make sure the gut is in the right place. Then we move to fix the second factor and third factor.
Okay. And so when you say the functional way, you're talking about the functional, like the practice of functional medicine. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And so how is that different from just conventional medicine?
In conventional, a lot of time when we have a people with depression or low mood, we just we look at their history and then what happened in their life and then try to find possible cause too. But usually the tool or the medicine the doctor can prescribe to the patient usually is drug. So usually they will focus on the drug that limited in the psychological drug like antidepressant.
Right.
But not a lot of a doctor will focus on other aspect like gut. Gut, and there are a lot of researchers suggest that gut is linked to the brain. So why don't we look at the gut? So that's how functional. Functional, we try to look at not just the gut. In functional, we look at the hormone, gut, and then we test your neurotransmitter, and we test other related things too. We haven't mentioned about the heavy metal. So this in functional, we have a lot of aspect to dip into. We're not just trying to go and then trying to just make your serotonin level high.
Right.
Just for this sake. And then it's like a fixing the problem at the end. But we try in function, we're trying to look for the real cause under is that because gut, because of the, since we are talking the gut, so I'm more focused on the gut, but in the real consultation with the functional doctor, they will dip into several aspects of your health, heavy metal, your childhood, even some infection, previous infection, all of this.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. So someone might think, I've got, like, based on what you've said today, they might think, I've got, you know, I've got low mood, or I've got depression or something. I've got a gut health problem, but it might be, yeah, it might be something to do with the gut, but it also might be a hormonal issue. It might be something to do with toxins in their body, or a whole range of different things, which you can then, I try to identify and then treat as well. That'd be fair to say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Hormone, maybe we'll make example to you for to easier understand. As I have some patient, elderly, usually when they getting old, their hormone is decreasing, the testosterone. And the testosterone, it's responsible for giving the male to have a drive or a libido or confident. So when you're getting old, this hormone disappear, you're confident going low and low, and sometimes you have no drive. It's depressed, and then you can starting depressing. So this is not the gut problem, this is a hormonal problem. Once you give them, so I prescribe some testosterone cream, and then patients start having, you know, happy with their life again. They travel, even though they travel again, they have a drive to do a lot of things. So you can see the difference. So yes, I will say that. And gut health is one another. Hormone, gut health, and other all are related. Our body not working as a separate part, they all work together.
Right.
So in functional, when we look at one symptom, we like to look at the whole aspects, not just one. Yeah.
Okay. So if somebody does have low mood or depression or something like that, and they do think it's gut health, and it ends up being, it starts out with, say, hormones, could that low hormone level actually impact the gut, like through the brain gut connection? Like if they start feeling low, could that have then an effect on their gut health?
I would say that there are some level they're connected. For example, it's vice versa. For example, if you're not eating enough good food, even your gut is good, but since you don't have for example, anemic patient.
Anemic, like a low anemia. Iron.
Low iron, low red blood cell. I have a patient that she's vegetarian and didn't eat. She doesn't eat a lot of meat, or she's a small lady. So her iron level and all the red blood cell level were low. So the carrying oxygen to the brain is very little. And then maybe producing hormones a little because it affected by the diet. You don't have the source of the fuel to turn into hormone, to make a lot of things signal in your body. Affect your brain. And then she has depression, not from the hormone, not from the gut, but from the low iron, low anemic, because oxygen cannot be transported to the brain that much, so their brain is not having enough oxygen or not producing enough ATP. So she has depressed mood, and she tend to eat less, and later on she not taking care of herself, and then she develop gut disorder. And then when she have low depressed mood, she start having immune problems, she start having infection, she start having taking antibiotic and killing the gut microbiome, and later on got dysbiosis because you're taking too much antibiotic.
What's gut dysbiosis?
Gut dysbiosis, this term is a wide range term, just to point out that any condition that gut is not working in the balanced way, gut dysbiosis.
Okay. So what can you do to improve your gut health just through the lifestyle? I mean, I'm guessing there's
one of gut dysfunction or gut dysbiosis. I think the main cause, we call them the modifier cause, would be lifestyle. Because in the genetic level, it's really hard to change. Even we know sometimes we cannot do anything much. But something that we can.
Doesn't lifestyle affect your genetics as well? Like it affects whether a gene is switched on or switched off. So that would also have a...
Yes, that's a something to say about that. Yeah, yes, I would say you're correct. You know, when we talk about gene, they have a several level. Some gene is a gene that are fixed. You change. But the part that can be changed would be epigenetic. The one that you mentioned, that lifestyle is one of the epigenetic. But the gene, for example, some people born with the congenital abnormality, we can't change it because their gene is fixed. So
right.
I would say, so when we discuss about what is the cause, I would be more happy to talk about the modifiable or changeable cause more than just your DNA. So I would say lifestyle is one of the main cause. It's like epigenetic. A lot of people will link it to epigen as a part of a modify your gene can shift on and off to express, to let your gene expression to express or not expressing the gene part. Yeah.
I was just wanted to ask you a question about that. Is there a way of knowing or finding out what your what lifestyle changes would best affect you? Is there a test you can do to see, oh, look, I'd be better off doing eating these foods, or I'd be better off exercising in this way to have a positive effect on my particular gut or microbiome? Or is that not something we can do just yet?
The first thing I would say, when we evaluate a patient that have a gut problem or not gut problem, the first we talk about the history first. The second, we run some tests. So I would say in the history part, you can ask about the symptom, but some people, the symptom is mild and they don't show any sign or symptom. But so that's why we have to run the test just to confirm or make sure that they have no gut problem. Or some patient, they were, because during the consultation, maybe patient will focus on something else. They're not talking about the other part. So we lack of information. So the easier part is we run some tests and to see that the gut is in the right order. So we send some tests that test the good microbiome, the gut, your MSAT level, your gut inflammation level marker, and some infection in your gut. And even we tested something we call sonulin that telling you have a leaky gut or not leaky gut. So this, all of this thing, we test it, and then so we know. And then we even test some of the neurotransmitter in your brain. We test the metabolite. We cannot directly measure the neurotransmitter in your brain, but we have some other indirect way we call measuring metabolite. When your body utilizes some of the neurotransmitter, they will produce some metabolite. So we can measure this metabolite and to see the level of a neurotransmitter. So starting from the test, when you get the test result, we match to the medical history you've given to us. So we look at what's the possible cause and how we can improve it, so we know how to improve it later on.
Okay. And I know that if you're improving your gut health, that's usually you're sort of also improving your general well-being and health. And I've read that the gut health has a significant impact on the immune system. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, this is another... gut is something very powerful, influence your brain, your emotion. And another one is another important thing is your immune system, which relates to a lot of things. When you talk about immune, a lot of people can relate to immune to a lot of things.
Does that mean that people who have got chronic immune problems or they're always sick, that they've probably got a gut health issue?
Yes, that's one of the factors. People who are, when you have easy to get sick or your immune is not good, we look at several aspects. One of the aspects that we look at is gut health. Because your gut producing, imagine when your gut producing some not a good stuff. For example, when you have have you heard about food intolerance?
Yeah, I have. But why don't you explain it?
Yeah. Food intolerance is not a food allergy, so it won't give you this symptom, swollen lips or difficulty breathing. Right away, that's a food allergy. Food intolerance is more about when you eat something and later on, 2 days or 3 days later, you will have a tired, you will be more easy to easy to get pimples, or you will have some very tired or depressed or skin problem after eating some sort of food. So because they create some antibody, and then this thing will cause the inflammation of your body, silence, and then it will affect your immune system. If you have food intolerance, we suggest you to avoid the food that you intolerant, so your body can be not burdened with a lot of inflammation, so later on, we slowly fix the your immune. But when gut related to immune, another thing is your gut produce some short chain fatty acid. There's a short chain fatty acid also fit to the immune cell. So when your gut cannot produce some food for your immune cells, your immune is weakened. Your immune is starting getting weak, and that's how they're related. Yeah.
So what happens? Like, is you've got the food intolerance and you've got the allergy. Is one worse than the other, or harder to treat than the other, or are they both? They're two different types of things, and they're both considered equally as bad.
The food intolerance and then the gut gut dysfunction, I think they are related. Sometimes they the same things, vice versa. Sometimes when you have a too much food intolerance, you can't eat anything. When the report comes, you almost 80% you are intolerance. It's really hard. So one of the factors that give you the food intolerance is you don't have a good gut. For example, when you have a bad bacteria or leaky gut, even you eat good stuff, your body won't respond in the normal way. It will elicit some abnormal cascade or abnormal reaction, even this good food, but because you have leaky gut. So I would say that food intolerance can result bad gut, and bad gut can result more food intolerance. Yeah, they are influence each other.
And then an allergy, like that's more of a long-term thing. You have, say, an allergy to milk, or can you have a food intolerance to milk?
The allergy is something I think more genetic. The allergy is something we don't, you can't be changed the gut problem and then you don't have food allergy. It's related to other more than the gut problem. So some medication, when you allergic to this medication, even you now your gut is good, it doesn't mean you can take it again, because the food allergy, the drug or food allergy is something more than the gut problem. It's more about allergy or your body program or your immune response. Yeah.
So an allergy, if I've got this right, an allergy is like almost a permanent thing that you probably can't shift or get rid of. At least not easily. And so you should steer clear of anything you're allergic to. But an intolerance is something that your body is just not responding well to, that you can, well, if you can heal your gut, well, then maybe 6 months or a year later after having good eating practices, that you can probably go back and eat again. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. You can go back and eat again, but not too much. Yes.
Yeah, because I guess then you could end up back in the same spot you were in before.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right. And so I've got I know that there's a paper out there that I heard something about Alzheimer's disease being linked with gut health. Have you heard about this?
Yes. I think the past few years people are talking more and more about Alzheimer's and linked to gut. That's something new. But for functional medicine, one of the directors, Dr. Wesley, he has been treating brain problem by treating the gut for so decades. So it's not new for the functional side, but new in the conventional side. Yeah.
And so, like, you're not curing Alzheimer's disease, though, are you? Or that's not what you're doing?
Usually, Alzheimer's disease, they found out that they have the beginning. They found some protein that is abnormal deposit in the brain. Later on, they found out that it's because your gut or your gut problem, they sometimes produce some inflammation mark interaction in some chemical signal that is promoting the brain inflammation. So that's why your brain started building some protein. So that's why they pointing to that maybe Alzheimer linked to the gut. And recent year, nowadays people tend to use more antibiotic, easier than before.
Oh, so they're saying the cause of Alzheimer's is the use of antibiotics.
Yeah, because of antibiotic, because now in the modern world, we use more antibiotic than ever.
Oh.
In the 100 years ago. So 100 years ago, people said probably they don't have that much Alzheimer, but now they're more and more.
Yeah, because it's food.
The antibiotic use. There's a correlation, but nobody will 100% sure, but this could be one factor.
Right. Okay. So there's still ongoing studies on this, but yeah. Okay. But they think that it's antibody use.
Yes. But anyway, fixing the gut is very safe and only no side effect. So even you have Alzheimer's, not having Alzheimer's, give it a try. Just fixing your gut is for your overall well-being and then safe, and then not a very difficult to do it. So I think. Whether you have Alzheimer's, immune disease, try fixing the gut first.
Right. Well, like what other serious sort of things can the gut affect?
Another we commonly seen in our clinic is autoimmune, Hashimoto, the thyroid autoimmune, the other eight, they come up with the 8A positive a little bit, not too much. And other autoimmune disease like skin problem, skin eczema or other things. Even some people, they have a, for me, I think I have a skin problem. I have a pimples, but I have pimples even I'm not in the teenager stage. Right. I have a pimple. So instead of I used to take isotretinoin acid, which is a vitamin A, and then to just fix my acne problem, but later on I found out that actually it's my gut. So that's why a lot of even Chinese medicine or some of the medical practice, they will suggest that pimple relates to the gut. But in conventional, not a lot of doctor will relate pimple skin problem with the gut.
Do you think that'll change? Do you think that, like, there's more papers coming out about the importance of gut health in a whole lot of different areas of just general health and well-being. Do you think that will impact conventional treatment?
Yes. Yes, I would say gut health is the future of medicine. In Thailand, we can see that the probiotic brands, from last year to this year, the brand's numbers not double. It's so many times more than the before. So a lot of people are, the product is probiotic, it's more and more in the market.
So you're talking about like just going into a pharmacy or a chemist, and you can see on the shelf, maybe last year there were 5 different varieties and this year there's 20.
Yes. And even in the conventional, in Thailand, people start doing the fecal transplant.
The what, sorry?
Fecal transplant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fecal transplant. Yeah. And then in conventional, the GI doctors, they have just started talking about good bacteria, how they affect the overall health. So this year, I think the first, not this year, last year was the first national conference that one of the leading university in Thailand, they started talking about the gut microbiome.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So it's becoming more and more known.
Yeah, I would say definitely gut health would be one of the big part that in the medicine that people will try to focus more in the future.
So you're saying that it's the future of medicine, and I've read that it can affect things like cancer, like metabolic weight gain.
Yes. Yes, I think in Thailand now there are a lot of laboratories, Korean laboratory, and even in Europe laboratories, they try to link a certain type of bacteria to certain type of the health problem, like obesity. They will find out that a lot of obese people, they have a lot of gut microbiome shifted to certain type of the gut microbiome. So they just, when they test your stool, and then they found out you have a lot of this type of bacteria, they will conclude that you might have a more tendency to gain weight. Yeah. So nowadays, people are trying to use gut microbiome to link to predict the health problem, obesity, hypertension, and even some. This one is I still need a lot of research about that. Cancer, and then gut microbiome. There are a lot of research already, but they need to maybe more to come in the future. But I have read about one of the gut microbiome we call Akkermansia, one type of bacteria. This type of bacteria, you can't be cultured, so you can't. They're not available in the capsule or powder in the pharmacy stores. This one's anaerobic, so you can't culture. You can only eat prebiotic to let them grow. They said they found out that this type of bacteria is associated with the successful rate of immunotherapy. If you have this type of bacteria good, among quality is good, the immunotherapy of cancer therapy, it's more successful. Yeah. So
that's, can you just say the name of that? Can you say the name of that again?
Akkermansia muniscifilis. Okay. Yeah. So you can search out this. This one is one of my favorite bacteria in the gut. There are some product now in the market, prebiotic, that claim that it's a food for this type of specific type of bacteria. Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to look that up.
Another one that when we talk about the bacteria, it's thousands of type of strains. The difficult point is, it's not like one bacteria responsible for one type of symptoms or disease. The bacteria is like human. They live together, different type of strains, they work together. Another very interesting thing, nowadays scientists trying to dip into how the bacteria, they're talking to each other. Imagine every single food particle molecule that you eat before they contact you or be absorbed to your bloodstream, they always have to go through the gut microbiome first. Imagine that if your gut microbiome not talking to each other good, or they react not normal with the food, so they send different signal. So and different type of bacteria react to the same type of food differently. So that's why when we talk about this gut microbiome disease, we have to have a mindset that it's not just one single bacteria responsible for one single disease. They bacteria, probably 100 bacteria, they work together, and then just for maybe one symptom, so one disease. Yeah. So this is another. Yeah.
How many species of bacteria are there?
I don't recall the number, but it's thousands of strains of type of bacteria. Yeah, but total number, people will say trillions, 3 trillions. And right. Some people will say they are 4 or 6 times. When we talk about DNA of the bacteria, genome bacteria, we are more than bacteria than human beings, because there are too many bacteria cells, more than our own body cells. Yeah. So just to give you an idea that it's a lot. And so that's why it's very important. But before, because the technology is not that advanced, so we don't know. Oh, another one I have to mention to you about the testing that we doing is some kind of very advanced testing. The testing we use NGS technique, we call next generation sequencing technique. This technique is before when we went in the conventional doctor or in the hospital, when we trying to identify a bacteria, what we do is we stain and we culture. We look at the shape and the food they eat and try to guess, oh, this one or this one or this one. So sometimes not too, of course, it's not really 100% accurate. But when you use NGS technique, usually we use in IVF to sequence the gene of the baby before we implant. So very specific. So we make sure the gene of the bacteria and then look at the and then compare the reference. If the genes are the same, then we think this is the same type of bacteria. So the technique is very specific. It's not like just so, because I maybe the, when people are listening, they try to think, is it just a common stool test? No, the common stool test would not give you any report about the microbiome. It's only give you the parasite infection, parasites,
okay,
the egg, the other things. But the test that I'm talking about is NGS technique. It's pretty advanced and yeah. So just to be clear,
that's a test you do when you're with your patients.
Yes, because we want to be more specific into, and in the report will give you the detail what type of bacteria, and or they will also group you into a functional group, or this group of bacteria trying responsible for making your gut lining is better, maintain your gut lining. And this group type bacteria that produce the short chain fatty acid I mentioned to you, butyric acid. And this type of group bacteria, they are trying to contribute to making gas. And this type of bacteria, they do other functions. So we group into a function group and a specific bacteria group too. So in the report, you will see a lot of details.
Okay. I just wanted to go back. You were talking like we were talking previously about like the gut brain connection, and then we started talking about how gut health and cancer can have an interplay. And I was just wondering, is there any research out there to suggest that brain cancer is the result of a gut microbiome issue?
I would say that there is no a specific brain cancer. Most of research, when we talk about gut microbiome and cancer, they relate to colon cancer more. Colon cancer, okay. GI cancer more, more commonly related. But personally, I believe that all type of cancer, relates to gut in some level. Because
I
always explain to patients this way. Sometimes when you have a cancer, it's not about the cancer, is about your immune system. Your immune system probably not in the right place, so you develop the cancer. But in some patient, it's not about your immune system. It's about the cancer itself, because you have a gene or you have other things that so even you have a good level of immunity, but you will develop cancer anyway. So there are several types. So immune relates to the gut. Right. So there are some. So that's why we relate it to cancer to the gut. Another one is fixing the gut is very safe, and that's very almost no side effect. So that's why in cancer patient, we always fix the gut. Another one, it's a very good, easy way to think about how your gut related to cancer. Imagine. When you have cancer, ongoing treatment of cancer, you cannot eat. And people will lose appetite. And another one, you will absorb little nutrients. Little nutrients will give you low immunity, right? So imagine if your gut is not good, you can't absorb certain type of food, certain type of nutrients. Or since your gut is not good, you cannot... probably convert or reaction of the food, and then your body is not going the way it's supposed to be. So it results if you have impair of immunity. So that's why your cancer got more aggressive. Sometimes cancer is not aggressive. Sometimes because your immune is too weak. Yeah. So okay. Usually the best way is because gut is fixing the gut is safe. So that's why we just make sure that every single patient that comes to our clinic that have a cancer problem, brain problem, any problem, we fix the gut. Yeah.
Gut's a big deal. Yeah. Okay. So, and people like recovering from cancer, so let's say they've had cancer, they've gone through, whether it's through you or whether it's through a conventional therapy such as chemotherapy or whatever, and they've been told that they're cancer free now, still a good idea for them to have their gut checked after that and go through a process of fixing?
Yes. I think after you went through for all series of chemotherapy, radiation, and then other sort of cancer-related therapy, your body, you're exposed to a lot of toxin. Chemotherapy is a toxic chemicals.
Yeah, yeah.
So it will kill a lot of bacteria, good bacteria. And the bacteria that we're talking about, mostly we focus on the gut, but actually we have our skin also have a gut, we call it microbe biofloor or microbiota. Or even your skin or even other places of your body, they're all ever occupied by bacteria. Yeah. So after went through all series of treatment, I would say your gut will probably, the bacteria dies a lot. So it's a good time or perfect time to replace it again and then to make the gut come back to where it used to be. Yeah.
Right. So if someone is going through cancer treatment, is it better for them to wait until they, you know, finish that treatment or should they be doing their gut health, trying to improve their gut health at the same time?
I would say at the same time. The best is the same time because the treatment of the gut problem, it's very, very safe. It won't interfere with your main treatment. So I was usually we go together. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good advice. Okay. That's good to know. Thank you.
I mentioned a while ago about autoimmune disorder. I personally experienced a lot of patients that have autoimmune. When we fix the gut, and then their autoimmune body going down. Yeah, I think that's something very, very easy, and then give you very good result without any medication. Just fixing the gut with the probiotic, with a good bacteria, and then some enzyme. Another one, imagine that even you eat a lot of good expensive stuff, if your gut is not good, it's not properly absorbed. It doesn't mean anything to you. Even you eat a very expensive stuff.
Yeah. So even if you're eating all like organic food but if your gut's in not a good condition, it's not doing anything for you.
Yes. You're supposed to, if you eat something good, you're supposed to get maybe 80%, but since your gut problem, you probably get only 5 or 10, and then you waste a lot of money.
I'm just wondering what's the, like for someone who's like healthy, or I think I'm healthy, I don't think I've got any gut problems. Mm-hmm. But so I'm wondering, like, you don't have to be sick to have a gut problem, do you? You could still have gut problems and not know it. So I'm just wondering what the telltale signs are.
Okay. The gut problem, it depends on individual. So some people, they're starting having gut problem just one course antibiotic. Some people from a lot of patients, we found that once they they went through a course or two course of antibiotic, and then all the symptoms start develop.
So you're saying that if someone's had antibiotics for whatever reason, they should have their gut health Check.
I would say when you have empty bowel that you should take probiotic together, or and then continue taking it after finish the one course of empty bowel, because you kill, because empty bowel is not a specific killing, only the pathogenic type of bacteria. It kills everything. It kills all. It kills a group of bacteria. Different type of empty bowel that kill a group of bacteria. Negative gram, positive or negative bacteria, or anaerobic, aerobic, they have some a group bacteria. So when you finish one course of probiotic, empty probiotic, we always suggest you to take probiotic. I think another one that a lot of people have a misunderstand about the gut is your gut bacteria or your gut environment microbiome change every day. Once you poop, it's a we call it dynamic environment. It keeps changing. Once you have one diarrhea or two diarrhea can change the your gut numbers of bacteria and other things too. So that's why you need a consistent maintaining your gut environment. In some people, they when they get sick, maybe some infection a little bit, so they can recover it. Recover very fast, but some people when they get sick, some bacteria never back again. We don't know why.
Never returns.
Yeah. So like the bacteria that mentioned are coming Siamesifilus. People say when they die and then you cannot be cultured, right? So you cannot be given them back. They cannot grow back again. So that's why some of the bacteria never comes back. And even you eat probiotic every day, so some research suggests that taking probiotic as something they don't retain. For example, when you take maybe 25 billion of a bacteria a day, then maybe 1% or 2% retain or remain in the gut. Most of them will poop out. So that's why you need you need to replace every day. Every day. So that's why the a lot of our food in Asia, we have a kimchi, we have a fermented, and it's Western, you have a pickles, you have other. So people were eating or taking in a lot of probiotic every day. Yeah. So that's why it's a dynamic environment. So it's just, so that's why we recommend everybody even if you are healthy, you just replace once in a while, or maybe replace when you have a gut problem, you have a diarrhea, and then you need to replace any maybe a month, 1 month for the probiotic supplement. And maybe you go through some of treatment, and then after that, you get one or 2 months of a probiotic, but not just one or two, just an example, but you can keep taking it, it's safe. And then generally just maintain the good amount of the bacteria and then and change the strains. So as I mentioned that, don't my way is I will just not fix one formula. I will change it several brands.
So if you're taking a particular brand of probiotic, don't keep taking that same brand all the time. Change it up with other types of, well, not brand, but different bacteria
strains.
Types.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Strains. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious. Like, you know, we're born, and I read that you know when you're born, you if you're born naturally, the mother's microbiome is passed to you as you're born. Is that right?
Usually when you would deliver by vaginally, your most of gut microbiome would be your gut microbiome from your microbiome from your mother will stay in the skin more. But from the gut, there is some research suggests that when your mother the breastfeeding, once mother deliver baby, some of the microbiome will travel to the breast and stay in the breast, and then what comes out from the breast milk, and then your baby drinks the breast milk, breastfeed baby will have more good gut because they got some bacteria from the mother.
So does that set up a child's microbiome? Does it? Gut microbiome?
Yes.
So are they finding that children who are not breastfed have poorer gut health? Is that?
I haven't seen any research about maybe they are in there, but maybe I just don't see it. Research about in the conventional, there is already proven that breastfeeding give a lot of a good benefit, good immunity, good gut in the future. Yes, yeah. So, but this is something's quite new, and then it's when I first heard about this one, it's a very impressive, and then a bit surprised that they mother some of the bacteria from vagina can travel to the breast, and then later on lactating to as a milk, and then baby can drink it. Okay,
so it's not so important that you have a natural birth, because that can happen, is that right?
It's a natural way is always better, but when you have no choice, I would say yes, go for C-section is okay too. Yeah, and another one is, as I told you, that gut microbiome is something dynamic. It changes all the time. It doesn't mean when you were born you have a poor gut microbiome, and then you have no chance to for the breastfeeding. But you can prove it later on by giving good enough, and it's all dynamic. And later on, you can find out the people who grow up in the city and then in the rural. Kids, it's different. If I ask you which rural in the city, the kids in the city or kids in the rural, which one the immunity is more strong?
Well, I'd say the rural kids.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that later on you can slowly train, and then we call re-inoculate or later on by playing. So that's why playing for the kids is very important. Playing with the ground, and then sometimes they play with the pets.
Yeah,
play with dirty things, and then but not too much. I would say it's not too much. And another funny story, another funny fact about this one. This is one research about leukemia. Leukemia in kids. Leukemia happened to be a lot of kids get leukemia, and then they found out that. What caused the leukemia? And then they found there's one relationship. They say most of the kids who have leukemia, they have the socioeconomic status is higher than, it means most of family who have leukemia, their financial level is the middle upper part.
Right. So are they saying that it's a cleaner environment and?
Yes. Yes, this is one of the they say clean environment. Yes, and then but nobody conclude any further conclusion.
There's no conclusion,
but this is just no conclusion. But it's an interesting thing to think about why. Yeah, so yeah, that's one of the things that maybe cleanliness because my financial stable family or upper level. Family will tend to have a good environment, cleaner and more clean environment, it means less bacteria, and then so that's why you can see that the gut microbiome is not a new things for human beings, but it's new things for the medical field or scientist field. Yeah,
right. Well, we've got to sort of wrap it up now, but I was just wondering, what's your sort of top tip for gut health? What would you say if you can only say the best one thing to do for good gut health? What would it be?
The first thing is don't take any toxic things to your body. Now, if you are good, then don't take any anything that can harm to your gut. For example, any chemicals or another things that we always easy to take the antibiotic. When we get sick, especially in Thailand, in Asia, getting antibiotic that you don't need prescription. You get it from pharmacy store, just walk in, and then you say you want the ciprofloxacin, you want the norfloxacin, or you want
you don't need a prescription to get antibiotic.
Yeah, you don't need a prescription. So
wow,
it's easy to get it. And I'll so first thing is avoid anything that can harm to your gut, especially the antibiotic. Yeah, that's it. And another thing is, so if you can do it, processed food.
Reduce the processed food.
Since we have a limited time, if we can talk about your lives, how your lifestyle affects your gut microbiome, it's more interesting that some certain food, processed food will give you different type of a bacteria. In the test that we run, it can roughly tell that your eating behavior. If you're eating meat a lot, you will have a certain type of bacteria going up a lot. If you're eating vegetables a lot, there's some of the bacteria will go up. It's not a bad, good or bad. It's just how your body have to adjust. So when you eat meat, so that's why in this test, they can give you like a fortune teller. You don't need to tell me. I can look at based on your result and guess how's your diet. You're eating more meat or 99% correct because
too much McDonald's.
Yeah, nowadays we eat a lot of processed food without knowing it. So even you talk about and we can't really avoid it. So that's why eating probiotic is something that you need to, because we can't avoid sometimes. So
eating good food as much as you can is a really key thing.
Yes, yeah.
And but trying to avoid bad foods.
Yeah. Yeah, but the first thing will be go consult with your doctor first, because otherwise, if you started your own journey, you will tell me that you're probably not getting any better, because some people the level is very severe. You need something more than just probiotic. You need some other enzyme, other amino acid to help you to get better. And then probiotic treatment, and this one very safe. It takes several months to see the result. So I would say that the first thing, consult with your doctor, and then discuss and what's your symptom, and then it's the possible other cause, and then you start fixing the gut, fixing other part, and then overall can improve your health.
Okay. Thanks, Manop. Thanks for your time as well. And I guess we'll talk about this again, because it's a really fascinating topic. And we'll talk about a few other things next time.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
All right. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Visionary Health Podcast. We hope you found the information and insights we shared on gut health to be informative and engaging. And remember, taking care of your gut health is key to a happier and healthier life. Don't forget to visit our website at miskawanhealth.com to learn more about Miskawan Health and our vision. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with your friends and your family and leave us a review. Join us next time as we delve into another exciting health topic that affects our daily lives. And until then, take care of your gut and stay tuned to the Visionary Health Podcast. Thanks for listening and bye for now. Discover the secrets to a healthier and happier life by tuning into Miskawan Health on Instagram and Facebook. Our team is dedicated to bringing you the latest insights on functional health and well-being. Join us on this exciting journey and be a part of a growing community of like-minded individuals. Visit miskawanhealth.com to learn more about our mission and access a wealth of educational resources.